Hello, I'm John Rossi, a touring drummer with a love of all things animal. When I'm on the road, I visit as many zoos, aquariums. Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Hey, what's going on there? Hello? Hello? We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you Rossafari Zoo News. News you can use from the world of zoos and conservation. Every week, we bring you breaking news and analysis from around the globe, featuring the animals you love and the people who care for them. And here's your anchorman, John Rossi.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Rossafari Zoo News, your look at everything going on in the world of zoos, aquariums, conservation, and general animal weirdness. Y'all, hello. I am excited to have y'all back for another episode. I'm actually going to start off with the thing that I forget to say half the time, which is this is a crowdsourced Zoo News program. So if you happen to see anything that you think would fit this program, you can go ahead and send it to me, rossafaripod@gmail.com. You can tag me in it on the socials at Rossafari or at rossafaripod on the TikTok machine, or just get it to me in any way and I'll say your name at the end of the episode. And of course, you know, all that good stuff. Make sure you hit subscribe. Make sure you're following along on those social media places where you can tag me in the stuff. All the good things. All right. So we always start this segment of the podcast by me talking about my own life and what's going on. And I guess it's time to talk about the next bit of big news in my life. So I told y'all that there was a lot coming up. And then I told y'all about my little buddy Buzz, my new puppy, who I am just completely in love with. By the way, if you're not following at That'll Be the Day Buzz, you're missing out because little pup is adorable. And I post way too many pictures of him on there. But yeah, so that, you know, Buzz was exciting news, but this is also exciting news. And I haven't, well, honestly, it's silly to say, but I haven't wanted to jinx this one, even though I don't at all believe in that actually, you know, being a thing. But yeah, the news is that we are buying a house, y'all. And so as most of you know, if you've been following along for a while, Zoe and I have had a place in Philly where we lived for quite a while, actually, and then which we kept when we moved to Buffalo. And the reason we kept that place was it has served as basically my home base when I go down to Pennsylvania to visit my son Miles. And the house we have in Buffalo used to be Zoe's grandparents' house before they passed, which works out because we definitely cannot afford two houses, like, you know, two mortgages and stuff. Don't stop being patrons if you are. Promise. It's just we're getting a mortgage now. Like one mortgage. It's normal. But yeah. By the way, as a side note, getting a mortgage for a second home is a whole different process than getting a normal mortgage. And it is possibly the single most soul-sucking experience I've ever gone through. I'm actually very fortunate in that my mortgage guy is someone I know and have known since high school, and he's been very helpful. But y'all, what a process. But anyway, I digress. But yeah, okay. So getting back to the actual story of what's actually going on, even though we really loved our Philly place, it didn't make a lot of sense as a home base when I was down there because it was around 2 hours away from Miles. So every time I would visit him, I would drive to him from Buffalo and then go to Philly. Then the next day I would get up and go back to him, then back to Philly. And I would do that every day I visited. Sometimes I visit, you know, 3-4 days when I stay. So it would add like an extra 16 hours of driving in my little like 4-day visits. And honestly, it was just becoming a lot, you know, and like in the winter, sometimes it would be snowing or whatever. And I would end up just getting a hotel anyway, which was just extra silliness. So a few months ago, we made the decision to do this, and we sold the Philly place. And 1 week from today, if you're listening to this on the day it drops, we should be closing on a new house in the Harrisburg area right near Miles. I am so excited for this next chapter. And yes, I realize that I said should and keep hedging my bets and stuff. But honestly, that's just because the mortgage process was so ridiculous that I'm still waiting for like literally someone to jump out of a box in my house and be like, ha ha, you can't have a mortgage anymore. Ha ha ha, die. And if that sounds overly dramatic, you've never gone through a mortgage process on a second home before. But anyway, one thing you have to know about me when it comes to all of this is that I am not a house guy. When I was growing up, my parents would literally go and like go to open houses and look at houses when they were not in the market for a house. They just were fascinated by houses and picturing how they would set them up and everything. And y'all, that was not something I inherited. I don't know if it comes from, honestly, just not caring, or, you know, from being dragged by my parents to see all those houses and being annoyed by it because I was a kid, or if it comes from living in literally hundreds of housing situations between the various gigs I've played, you know, the housing they have there, or a lot of places will rent our bands like VRBOs or Airbnbs, or, you know, I'll stay on hotels when I'm on the road, like a different room every night for most of a year or whatever. And honestly, you know, I've spent months living on a tour bus. So, you know, I don't know. I've lived in a lot of places, even if it's short term. But so, yeah, houses are just things that kind of exist to me. I genuinely have no thoughts about them and have lived very contentedly in all of the houses and apartments and stuff that I've lived in over the years. That being said, this house, this one feels special. This one jumped out at me immediately. I got annoyed by how much I liked it, because I figured there was no way we would be able to get it with the market being insane right now and it being so perfect. It's a rough buyer's market right now, y'all. And I was pretty sure we wouldn't get it. But we did. So I'm really excited about that. Also, I don't think I've ever told y'all this, but we name all of our houses. This is actually not a me thing, though I do quite love it. But Zoe's family does this, and we've picked up on it. And so our Philly place, which is no longer ours, was known as Sloth Cottage. Our Buffalo residence is, shockingly, Panda Palace. And the new place is going to be called Anteater Abode. Some other finalists were Corvid Castle, Cheetah Chateau, Binturong Base, Tree Kangaroo Camp, and probably some other ones, but I don't want to give away all of our secrets. All right, we'll be back after this quick break.
What's all around you, almost everywhere you look, and makes your life better? Birds. Learn all about these beautiful creatures in this wonderful new podcast called Birds of a Feather Talk Together. Two experts guide two newbies on their journey to learn more. Mallard ducks, ivory-billed woodpeckers, Hawaiian honeycreepers, blue jays, cardinals, sandhill cranes, and more. Each week we discuss a different bird and walk away with a better understanding of the birds all around us. Oh, and we have a ton of fun doing it. Listen now. You're going to like learning about these birds. I guarantee it.
Either that or I, you know, don't remember them. Yeah, maybe that. Anyway, also, no, it is not a rule that the words have to start with the same letter since, you know, Sloth Cottage didn't. But that's just what we were coming up with. And by we, I mostly mean me because I just like word games. I talk a lot. I say a lot of things. You're listening to my podcast. You know this. But yeah, at the end of the day, Anteater Abode just felt right. So yeah, for the three of you that haven't stopped listening after rolling your eyes at all of this, thank you. And my last quick update here is just that at the end of this month, I'm heading down to North Carolina again for another gig. I don't know why North Carolina keeps calling me. It's all different shows and different venues and different areas of the state. But if nothing else, I'm heading to Greensboro Science Center again. So plenty of cool fun content will be coming your way, I am sure. And with all of that said, we don't have a big headline story this week, which is always nice when it happens, but let's get to it.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Ow, there's a funky monkey, tree kangaroo, or a binturong.
It's zoo news,
yeah.
All right, so we are starting off with our births for the week, and we're going to start with Point Defiance Zoo, which has announced the birth of 5 critically endangered American red wolf pups that were born at their offsite facility. So, yeah, so many red wolves being born, and I am so excited about all of it. It just brings me so much joy. So yeah, this has been a continuing trend the last couple weeks, and every one of these births is wildly important. So congratulations to the team at Point Defiance Zoo. Next up, we have a very cool, very exciting story from Trentham Monkey Forest, where this is apparently just like a forest where monkeys live, you know, I mean, under human care, obviously, but it looks like a very cool facility. I had not heard about it until this was sent to me. But anyway, 2 Barbary macaque babies have been born within the past week or so at the Monkey Forest. And they are really adorable. And they were born, you know, out in the forest like this place is. So they were born like up in the trees and overnight. They live a very natural life there. And even though they are in human care, they don't really have any human interference there. So it's really awesome to see this endangered birth at such a cool and unique facility. The Wildcat Conservation Center has announced the birth of 4 cheetah cubs. Cheetlets. The mother is known as Emmy, and she has been a wonderful mother in the past and continues to be this time as well. So congrats to Emmy the cheetah and everyone at the Wildcat Conservation Center. The The Oregon Zoo has announced the birth of 13 California condor chicks at their conservation center this year. That is a new record for their facility. Now, these are animals that are released into the wild to boost the population of the species, which is still critically endangered. But 13 hatches, especially, you know, in a population that has seen some problems because of avian influenza, this is a good, good thing, y'all. Sea Life in Weymouth has announced the birth of 4 otter pups. Otlets. One thing that I found amusing, it actually kind of threw me when I read the story and then looked at the picture. The parents are Issa and Badger. And so the way this was written, Badger was one of the first words, and I looked at the picture and saw otters, and I thought was confused. But yeah, so Sea Life Weymouth is actually installing, or actually already installed, a nest cam, and they are starting to share footage of their adorable otter pups. So that's really, really exciting news and something that you can check out by going to at Sea Life Weymouth, which is Weymouth. And then last but not least, the Cape May County Zoo has welcomed a newborn zebra foal, a zeblet. Yeah, it's a female foal that was born to Lydia and Ziggy. And they just went right out to the herd and is hanging out with the herd and doing very well. And you can see her and all of the other zebras if you visit the zoo. And then that, of course, brings us to our devs. And we're going to start off with the Jacksonville Zoo saying goodbye to a Grevy's zebra stallion named Mosey. Mosey was 24 years old, which is very geriatric. The median life expectancy of the species is only 11. So 24 is, you know, astonishing. And unfortunately, he had a sharp decline in his mobility and so had to be euthanized, surrounded by animal care specialists that cared for him, which is such a sad but beautiful image. Right up until the end, Mosey really loved the ladies and would always start the morning sprinting out to greet the females that he lived with. He was clearly very charismatic. And he was also very loud. So a lot of times, especially in the early morning, people would hear him from all over the zoo, which is absolutely adorable. And Mosey will be very missed. The St. Louis Zoo has announced the passing of Boris, a cinerous vulture. At the age of 36 years old, he was one of the oldest in human care. And unfortunately, late in life, he developed an eye disease. And as things got worse, the decision was made to humanely euthanize. It was the right call, but always, always a sad story. So goodbye, Boris. The Columbus Zoo has announced the passing of a Barbados black-bellied sheep named Felix. He was absolutely loved at the zoo and was considered truly one of a kind. He was almost 15 years old, which makes him the oldest documented individual of the species. But he was also known for being very warm and very gentle, friendly, all that good stuff. He loved guests, he loved his keepers, and because he was so gentle, even the smallest of children tended to fall in love with Felix. Sadly, Felix suffered from severe osteoarthritis, and they were able to, you know, manage it for a while, but it did progress to the point where that was no longer possible. And so the right decision was made to humanely euthanize Felix. He will absolutely be missed by everyone who ever went to that zoo. The new zoo and adventure park has announced the loss of two animals. First up, they said goodbye to Jason the Red Wolf. Jason was a 12-year-old Red Wolf, meaning that he did outlive the typical life expectancy for his species, and he had actually lived most of his life at different facilities before moving to the new zoo to partner up with Mayo, a female wolf at the zoo. He did sire many pups, including ones that were released in North Carolina before going to the new zoo. But Jason and Mayo never made it and you know, successfully had pups. That being said, they did have a really strong relationship, which was especially important as Mayo just turned 15, making her one of the oldest known red wolves in the world. So the team is carefully watching her to see how she's doing, and the SSP is working hard to try to find her a new companion, but Jason's presence is definitely felt as missing at this time. And it was really a tough week at that zoo because the new zoo also said goodbye to Minnie, the North American river otter. Minnie was 15 years old and had been at the zoo since 2021. Unfortunately, she had a chronic condition involving her kidneys and bladder, and she did have a successful surgery last year that helped with a lot of the symptoms, and she did bounce back from that. But unfortunately, you know, things started to progress and get worse again. And so the decision was made to euthanize. And yeah, she was known for having a very energetic spirit and was known for her playful antics. And she will be greatly missed. And then last but not least in this section, the Dublin Zoo said goodbye to Ernie, the male hippopotamus that lived at the zoo. Ernie only recently arrived to the zoo from West Midlands Safari Park. This was like at the end of April, so it's only been a couple weeks. He was settling in well. He seemed very inquisitive and very active, but now he is gone, and it was very unexpected. They had no idea why. So the Dublin Zoo is currently awaiting the results of a comprehensive examination to understand what exactly happened, but sending love to that team for sure. And then that brings us to the rest of our zoo news section. So Prospect Park Zoo has officially announced its reopening. I'm really excited about this. You may remember that the zoo closed in September of 2023 after intense flooding in New York City caused a lot of damage to the zoo without causing any loss of animal or human life at the zoo because they handled it so well, which is just amazing. So, you know, again, props to that team. I know I said it back then. But yeah, the zoo will be opening on Friday, May 24th for members and on Saturday, May 25th for the public at large. I'm just so excited that this small but mighty zoo in Brooklyn will be opening its gates again. Congrats to the team for waiting out this period of closure and continuing to care for the animals so diligently. And I also just want to say, you know, congrats to the WCS. They invested what was needed to fix up the zoo and improve areas that were affected by the flooding to not only help the zoo bounce back, but to ensure that something like this won't happen again. What a great success story. An article in Atlanta Magazine came out recently talking about the incredible amount of water used at the Georgia Aquarium. Now, the article mentioned that the aquarium processes 12 million gallons of water every single day, with 98% of it being recycled. It was actually a really cool article that goes into how the Georgia Aquarium works on what's called a closed loop, recycling the water in a process of retrieval, cleaning, waste removal, and recalibration, which is really cool to see and understand, which if you get to do a behind-the-scenes tour at the aquarium at some point, which I super recommend doing, you'll get to see a lot of that. It's very cool. But of course, online, some people only read the headline about how the aquarium uses 12 million gallons of water a day and immediately started mocking the aquarium and their conservation messaging while using so much water every day. Big, huge eye roll from John. But for those that actually read the article, it painted an amazing picture of how much work they do to be a landlocked aquarium and still take care of their animals without, you know, wasting water. Definitely worth checking out the article in Atlanta Magazine if you want a cool look at the incredible aquarium. Oh, but speaking about the whole idiots online thing, a lot of facilities are starting to announce their Pride Month events. I've seen posts so far from the Virginia Zoo and the Henry Vilas Zoo, with more to come, I'm sure. And I think the events all look super cool, but of course, people feel the need to comment and complain, and my personal favorite, accuse these facilities of trying to groom kids into being gay. And this is, without a doubt, my favorite stupid thing that is happening right now. I mean, obviously, I hate it. When I say favorite, I mean least favorite, but I also kind of have to laugh at the idea behind this. Like, do you know what has never, ever, ever happened in the history of humans? No straight dude has ever looked at a drawing of a rainbow on a lion habitat window and thought, oh, well, all right then. I would clearly like to stick a penis in my mouth now, please. That's just not how this works. It's not how any of this works. At all, ever, never, ever, never, ever, ever. So if you see these posts, please take the time to leave a like and a positive comment. And if you send them to me, I will too. And if the post is really being slammed by idiots, I'll post it on my socials and we'll get the Rossafari community to go make a bunch of positive comments. This kind of bigotry is so ridiculous, so unfounded. It's just so much. But props to all of the zoos out there that are having pride events, that aren't afraid of this, and are promoting them and putting up with the idiots. The Pittsburgh Zoo has announced a new mascot, a red panda. Like a true mascot costume of a red panda, which looks really good, despite me kind of feeling that all mascots walk a fine line between creepy and cute. I don't know, probably just a me thing. Possibly because I didn't get groomed into furry culture at an early age? Anyway, the zoo is currently taking donations to make naming suggestions, with each entry costing at least a $1 donation, though you are obviously allowed to offer more. All of the proceeds go directly to the AZA Safe Red Panda Program. Woo! So if you want to support our program, and I still can't believe I get to call it our program, this is a great way to do so with a small donation. And don't forget to suggest the name Rossafari. I'm kidding. Unless you do it. The AZA is teaming up with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to do another round of Toss the Tusk Days at zoos around the country. These events raise awareness about the wildlife trafficking crisis and allow people to bring ivory items for proper disposal. The events take place at AZA facilities around the U.S., with the first one of the year having just taken place at the San Diego Zoo. I like this initiative. I think it's a good one. And actually, speaking of cool initiatives, the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore has joined the Pennsylvania Game Commission and other members of the Allegheny Wood Rat Working Group to help rebuild struggling populations of wood rats. The zoo will be founding a small colony to breed future generations of wood rats for release. Now, much like Howie Binturong is called a bear cat, despite being neither a bear nor a cat, a wood rat is called a wood rat despite not being made of wood. They are rats, though, so I guess this all kind of falls apart upon further inspection. But yay, conservation initiatives at cool zoos like our friends, the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore. And also at the Auckland Zoo in Australia, which has teamed up with the Department of Conservation to care for 5 Awakapaka skinks. I hope I'm saying that right. Now, these skinks, it's a species with fewer than 20 individuals left in the known wild population. The 5 skinks in question were pulled out of the wild and taken to the zoo as a predicted heavy seeding event threatened to increase mammalian predators such as mice and stoats in the area the skinks live in. The hope is that the zoo will be able to use these 5 animals to start a safety net population that can hopefully be used to rewild the species. And in just a few short weeks at the zoo, the animal care team has already learned a lot about the animals, including observing behaviors that surprised the team based on what is believed about the animals from the limited number of studies done of them in the wild. So the safety net population will obviously help the species tremendously. But I'm sure the knowledge learned from having them in human care will also make a huge difference to the animals. Oh, and let's keep going with this trend. The Zoo and Aquarium Association, also in Australia, also called the ZAA, which we also have a ZAA in the U.S., but anyway, has announced that multiple of their member facilities have teamed up for a successful conservation effort to help save the critically endangered orange-bellied parrot. Multiple facilities, including Moonlit Sanctuary Wildlife Conservation Park, Healesville Sanctuary, Priam Citiculture Center, I love that so much, and Adelaide Zoo have teamed up to breed and release a record number of juveniles and adults back into their natural habitat this year. In total, the program has around 630 birds in it, with 186 parrots being released last year alone. Amazing. The Greater Vancouver Zoo has announced that they had a minor electrical fire on their vintage miniature train this past week. Everyone was kept safe, and the fire was put out minutes after discovery, but it was definitely a scary time for everyone at the zoo. This is actually the second train fire at a zoo I remember hearing about in the last year or so, so hopefully the people in charge of maintenance and stuff keep that up and this stops happening, but I'm so glad everyone is safe and that people were trained well and everything turned out okay. Oh, just a real quick thing to let y'all know. The Nashville Zoo is currently selling a Wilbur the Binturong t-shirt or sweatshirt available for a limited time only through their socials. Do it. Buy one. You know you want to. And then last but not least in zoo news this week. You remember Charlotte the stingray at the Shark Lab in Hendersonville, North Carolina, who made national news back in February when she got pregnant despite not living with a male stingray? The Shark Lab PR team put forth the suggestion that it might be parthenogenesis, but that she also might have gotten pregnant from one of the sharks she lives with. And while the aquarium staff privately posted to private animal care forums that they knew sharks were not knocking up stingrays all of a sudden, the PR team public response remained that anything was possible, with the aquarium doubling down and saying, we don't know what happens in the ocean. It's a big place and we can't see everything that happens there. That whole mess? Well, the aquarium was providing weekly updates on their possible miracle pregnancy until about mid-April, when the updates just stopped. Now, keep in mind, this was all going on in February initially, and they thought that Charlotte would give birth any day. Now, this week, they finally updated the public with a social media post with comments turned off. And the post basically said that there isn't anything to report. Charlotte still hasn't given birth, but the aquarium doesn't know why. They said it is possible that Charlotte's embryos died and she reabsorbed them to take advantage of the nutrients, and that it is also possible that the pregnancy is taking longer because of diapause, a process in which the female puts her embryo growth on hold because she is feeling particularly stressed. So, those are the options, and the Shark Lab is apparently not interested in hearing the thoughts of the public on the topic. So, to recap, according to the Shark Lab, the current situation is that Charlotte either is or isn't pregnant, and if she is, it's either a half-shark, half-ray hybrid baby or a clone created through parthenogenesis. But it might not be because she might not be pregnant anymore, and they just don't know, even though they were able to tell that she was pregnant. I feel like they probably should have figured out what was going on before posting this. This is some like Kate Middleton stuff already. And they must have known that the response to the post wasn't going to be great if they felt the need to preemptively turn off commenting. But y'all, I have a different theory. I think that Charlotte has had her pups. And it turns out they actually were hybrid animals. And the aquarium has already started using them to film their upcoming blockbuster movie, Sharkrado.
Conservation! Conservation! News time! Oh yeah!
Our friends at Red Panda Network have launched their international Red Panda Day 2024 t-shirt campaign through Bonfire. You can get your shirts and sweatshirts and such by heading to redpandanetwork.org or visiting their socials at Red Panda Network. You get a shirt, RPN gets money, pandas get saved. Go team! Shirts are available through May 27th. On a less happy note, fin whales have been added to Japan's kill list, the list of animals that are allowed to be killed for meat and profit in the country. The whaling industry has been dying for a long time, going extinct like so many of the species that, you know, they caused to go extinct. But this is definitely a step backwards. You know, I know it's a simplistic thought, but I really wish people would just get over this kind of thing already. Accept that times have changed. Move on and stop, you know, hunting things like whale species to extinction. What a crazy thought. A recent study done on birds and noise pollution had some startling results. Noise pollution from traffic stunts the growth of baby birds, both after hatching and even while developing in the egg. Along with stunted growth, birds exposed to noise pollution at an early age, or again in the egg, have negative effects on their health, growth, and reproduction. This is the latest study showing the effects of noise pollution on birds, as previous studies have shown that it can cause major distress to birds and also make communication challenging for birds of all ages. So, hopefully to save birds, we can start to cut down on noise pollution. And then last but not least in conservation news, we're going to end it with the goodie. An American river otter has been spotted in Chester County in Pennsylvania for the first time in over 100 years. River otters had gone all but extinct in Pennsylvania until a reintroduction effort took place at the turn of the millennium, running until 2004. And while the population definitely rebounded in areas of the state, there were still plenty of places where it had not. Including Chester County, obviously. So fortunately, it seems like the otters from that project have continued to live their best wild lives and continue to travel through their former territory. So this is a huge victory for river otters in Pennsylvania.
It's time for other news. It's time for other news. Hey, all right now, then now it's time. It's time for other news. Hey, it's a segue to the Paw Got Other News!
An elephant seal became a local celebrity in British Columbia, Canada recently. Emerson, a 2-year-old elephant seal, was hanging out on land and seemed very habituated to humans. He even allowed his fans to pet him, take selfies with him, and even rub their noses on his nose. Quick pause here to remind all my listeners that it is never okay to treat wildlife this way. And actually, that's exactly what Canadian wildlife officials thought. And so as such, they picked Emerson up and moved him to a beach roughly 125 miles away. 1 week later, Emerson reemerged from the water at the beach where he had become famous, swimming an average of 20 miles a day to get back there. So, as of now, wildlife officials are allowing Emerson to stay at that beach. Volunteers have set up barriers and are taking turns to try to keep people away from Emerson, who has had entire school groups visit him. People have brought their dogs to sniff him. It gets weird, y'all. And unfortunately, the volunteers are having limited success. So far, Emerson seems to just still be fine with it all, just chilling on his favorite beach and interacting with his fans when they do get past the volunteers. But this is obviously not a great situation, and it's a 500-pound animal that can be very aggressive. That said, he has not been. And I don't know. It's always, even as I worry and I say as a responsible conservation educator and a podcast host, like, not okay. There is a part of me, just a very real, very human part of me that's like, it's kind of a neat story. It kind of makes you wonder what's going on and you want to anthropomorphize and be like, oh my gosh, Emerson loves people. Hopefully Emerson doesn't like kill a dog or hurt a person, but it's a neat story, even if I'm not actually okay with, you know, what's going on. And then last, but not least in other news, a person or people have been setting booby traps for dogs on the Appalachian Trail. Dog treats were left along the trail with fish hooks embedded in them. And this happened specifically around the Lehigh Gap near Slatington, Pennsylvania. But keep an eye out everywhere, y'all. So those booby traps in the Lehigh Gap were discovered, and all of the treats that were found have been removed. But if you know anyone who is into hiking at all, please give them a heads up about this story, even if they're nowhere near the AT or Pennsylvania. This is one of those things that almost sounds like an urban legend, but like, I have fact checked it and it's true. It really happened, and it's really gross. How people can do that? Anyway. I digress. But yes, please warn people if you are able to and you know anyone who this might affect.
Oh, animal, oh, animal, animal holidays. Animal, oh, animal, animal holidays.
Hey! It is May, which is National Duckling Month, National Lake Cleanup Month, and No Mow May. And y'all, everyone, and I mean everyone around us mowed today, and our lawn looks like my bedhead when I'm well past due for a haircut, which, by the way, I am. But it's no mow May, damn it. I don't want to mow in May. It's a thing. Rewilding is good. Anyway, for your individual days and your weeks, May 17th is Endangered Species Day. May 18th is National River Cleanup Day, and also starts Safe Boating Week, which runs through the 24th. May 19th starts National Bear Awareness Week, which runs through the 25th. The 20th is National Bee Day and National Rescue Dog Day, which totally makes sense because my rescue dog, Buzz, ate a bee a couple days ago. Very weird to see a tiny dog eat a fairly large bee, but it was fine. Anyway, the 21st is World Tree Kangaroo Day. Woo! Sorry, I get excited. And then the 22nd is the International Day for Biological Diversity. And the 23rd is World Turtle Day. So many good days this week. I'm so excited. All right, and there you have it, folks. Another week of Rossifari Zoo News is in the books. I'd like to say thank you to all of my patrons, especially my Red Panda level patrons, Dr. Laura Shank, Dr. Stephen Williamson, Barbara Bennett, and Jenny Owens. I would also like to say thank you to everyone who sent in stories this week, and it's a good list, y'all. We've got Anya Keene, Colleen Lenahan, Kim Cooley Croninger, Carrie Kirkpatrick, Kevin Williams, Ken Tryon, Dr. Laura Shank, Emily Rockbuck, Michaela Baratka, Melissa Reed, Elizabeth Dunleavy, who, actually, I have a funny story about. So I've known Elizabeth since we were in school together, and I always called her Liz. But I recently learned from her that she prefers going by Elizabeth, which I'm totally happy to respect. But it turns out Elizabeth isn't actually her legal name. I always called her Liz because her first name is actually Lizard. How crazy is that? Her parents named her Lizard. It's so cool, especially for a guy who hosts an animal podcast. Crazy. Okay, that's not true, but she sent me a meme about naming a kid Lizard, and then they go by Liz. Anyway, I decided to have fun. I apologize that I just did an inside joke to, like, thousands of you, but hey, the price is right. Anyway, getting back to the list, Kay Malensky, Allie Malensky, the Malenskys, Sam Evans, Michael Sebastian, Rob Wright, Matt Patford, Jay Meredith, Jess Wells, Ren Howell, Tiana, Crystal Chapman, Ann Mikikrin, Ann Yoshioka, Addie Bjornson, and Aaron Kellum. Thank you all for sending me stories this week. And hey, on Tuesday, we're going back to the North Carolina Zoo for a really cool look at some really neat conservation work and a species that you haven't heard too much about on here or, I'm guessing, anywhere. So make sure you're here for that. And until then, friends, remember, the words Newsy Credits backwards are Steiderk Yuswen.
The Rossifari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rossifari or by email at rossifaripod@gmail.com. Rossifari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.
Available, well, that's not a word.